We are tracking a critical court hearing today that could decide the fate of the federal criminal charges against former FBI Director James Comey and New York Attorney General Letitia James. In a rare joint hearing, lawyers for both Comey and James argued that the case's lead prosecutor, Lindsay Halligan, was unlawfully appointed. Halligan was sworn in as interim U.S. attorney back in September, just days after the former person in that position resigned after facing pressure to indict Comey and James.
Okay, let me get this straight. Let's see. James Comey is innocent, really. Oh, no, they don't talk about that. They don't talk about his innocence. They talk about the procedure. They talk about Lindsay Halligan shouldn't have been appointed. There was something wrong with her appointment. Letitia James, she hasn't done anything because they never mention it. It's all about the Lindsay Halligan appointment. It's all about President Trump going after his enemies because, you know, we've never heard of that happening before. It's such a twisting of what's happening, and we haven't spoken about it in a while. So I've asked Bruce to join me today so we can kind of dissect this thing going on in Alexandria, Virginia, with James Comey on trial. We wanted to see him on trial. Well, we actually want to see him convicted. I'll just speak for myself. The other thing we're going to talk about today is something that I never talk about. But I'm going to mention it today because I think some things need to be said, and that is the Jeffrey Epstein scandal, okay? This is probably the last time you'll hear me talk about it, and it's first time probably. I know, maybe I've talked about it many, many years ago, but this is so salacious, I don't like to talk about it. But because it's being used in such a perverse way, a perverse thing being used in a perverse way, imagine that. I think we need to sort some things out, so we'll do that today. But first, I think the common denominator of concern and heartbreak and the thing that touches us all is the life of babies. It's not just their life. It's the birth. It's the family element. It's the mother. We all have mothers. Most of us have had babies, not all of us, but children, brothers and sisters. There's something in our humanity which draws us to that, which even the toughest guy like a Tom Holman or even the toughest criminal has a tenderness in their hearts for babies. And there's a reason for that. It's because God has created us that way. We have this tenderness that's kind of wired, hardwired into us. And so for a second, let's think about, we're going to talk about a lot of things, but think about a woman who's caught in an unplanned pregnancy. Some of you women might think back to your teenage years. We know we lived, many of us didn't come up in innocent times. And you can still imagine what it would have been like if you had been pregnant. Maybe you have been. You found out you were pregnant, out of wedlock, the panic of that. Or some of you have been married with multiple children. Maybe the financial burden is pretty great in your home and you think about taking on another child or your age or whatever, your health. It doesn't take much to imagine what it's like for a woman to be find out that she has an unplanned pregnancy. Well, I'll tell you one woman that did that. She's an older woman. She was barren and really deeply distressed because she couldn't have children. Humanly, it was unexpected that she could have a son at her advanced age. After all, Sarah was 90 and Abraham was 100 when Isaac would be born. God's plan of redemption often works in the unplanned. Isn't that the truth? And so with that beautiful thought, I would just encourage any of you that know someone who's in an unplanned pregnancy or, you're closer to it. Maybe you work in a crisis pregnancy center or you've experienced it. You have a granddaughter. I don't know what. But think about it. God does work in the most wonderful ways with things that are unplanned. If you would like to stop women from making really bad decisions, young or old, about the taking of the life of their baby, preborn provides ultrasounds so that they can see them, get acquainted, and actually brings the child to life, so to speak, for the mother. One ultrasound is $28. You just have to go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. All right, this is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. You know you can call us at 662-821-2040. That's 662-821-2040. And you can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can find us on any social media platform, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Truth Social, YouTube, Telegram, and a few others. You can also find us, the podcast, on any podcast platform. or you can go to sandyrios.com because that's easy. It's a website if you're not, used to podcasting. By the way, it's very simple if you ever really want to do that. But if it's hard for you, go to sandyrios.com, and you can listen every day or whenever the podcasts are posted. Last but not least, of course, not least, is AFR.net, AmericanFamilyRadio.net. That's our home base, and you can certainly listen to the podcast there as well. All right, well, we're going to talk about controversial things today. Wouldn't that be a change? And I hope that we can bring something to help you think about and discern what you're hearing in the news on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
That federal magistrate judge offered a blistering assessment of the U.S. Attorney Halligan's performance before a grand jury in seeking those indictments against former FBI Director James Comey. The judge claims there's evidence that Halligan made fundamental misstatements of the law that could compromise the integrity of the grand jury process. Specifically, the judge claims that Halligan told the grand jury that Comey did not have the right to avoid testifying at trial, something guaranteed under the Fifth Amendment, and that Halligan told the grand jury it could consider evidence not before it and could surmise that the government would have more evidence at trial. The judge also raised concerns about whether the specific indictment returned in open court was the same indictment before the grand jury that it deliberated on, raises serious questions about the government's misconduct in the case. The judge also offered DOJ ordered them to produce a full transcript of audio recordings and the transcript from Halligan's grand jury presentation. Halligan has come under intense scrutiny because she has no prosecutorial experience and was appointed after her predecessor was forced out by President Trump after he refused to seek indictments against Comey for allegedly lying to Congress. DOJ is refuting the allegations and is appealing the magistrate's ruling.
Wow, that's a word salad. And that's Pierre Thomas from ABC. And of course, they are desperate to throw this accusation against James Comey away. They're trying to get rid of it in the court. And so they're not talking, of course, about James Comey, what he's actually done. Remember, he's that, 7-foot-tall former FBI director who loves Taylor Swift. He just loves her. He also, lied to Congress. We kind of all saw that. He did his part to make sure that Hillary Clinton was never prosecuted for having this private server in her bathroom and causing, as Secretary of State, sensitive information to be leaked to foreign governments who are our enemies. That's part of the story. He made sure she got off with that. He also leaked to his buddy information, his meetings with President Trump in the Oval Office. This is the President of the United States meeting privately with the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and Comey took it upon himself to take meticulous notes and then hand those off to his buddy, the professor, to leak to the New York Times. I could go on and on. This man is a liar, a cheat, and now we're watching as a full court press is unfolding on technicalities, any way possible, by any means necessary, get this poor guy off so he can go back and enjoy Taylor Swift. So we're going to talk about this today. It's not funny. And Bruce is with me today, I'm happy to say. Of course, Bruce, my husband, is a retired former special agent for the FBI and is not a fan of James Comey. Are you, babe? Did you hide that from me? Are you a fan?
I am not a fan, but I don't do that. I don't base that on just feelings. I base it on actions, as you've already detailed.
Yeah. He's been a pretty disgusting example. I think he single-handedly, coming on the heels of Robert Mueller, has destroyed the reputation of the FBI. I think you can lay that at his feet, and that would be, it's a long way down to his feet. So, Bruce, let's talk about this. First of all, I've alluded to, Comey was one of the people that met in the Oval Office with Barack Obama while Trump was being inaugurated to plot how to bring President Trump down. We know that now. And he was center to all of that. And so, yeah, he and Trump don't get along, but they're trying to make this about President Trump and James Comey and President Trump trying to get James Comey. He's trying to get his enemy. And that's kind of what they're boiling this down to. Just your thoughts about that.
It's so ironic. It's really unbelievably ironic. Under Joe Biden and James Comey, we saw the complete weaponization of the federal government, not just the FBI, but all kinds of agencies, the IRS, the administrative agencies. And, you know, that has all seemed to pass under the bridge that that never occurred. And so now accountability is being sought by the Trump administration. In other words, you cannot do the things that were done by the Biden administration and just let it pass and say, well, that's, you know, the old Hillary Clinton defense. That's old news. Let's move on. You cannot do that because now we have planted seeds that are going to rot the entire federal government if it's allowed. So, of course, this looks, the actions by the Trump administration now to rectify these things, of course, looks like retaliation. And anyone who wants to spin it that way has an easy job. Cleaning things up is never easy. And it is going to appear that this is retaliation because it is a form of retaliation. It's getting back at the people that did wrong.
Yeah, but it's
it's legal. Retaliation is the incorrect word.
Right.
They are cleaning up the mess, the illegalities that were committed by the Biden administration, and it's a dirty job.
Actually, I think James Comey should be charged with high treason. I think the charges against him are not enough. They're not good enough, and that may be the problem. If there's a fault with the Justice Department, it could be that, Bruce. But let's talk about what's happening. This is happening in Alexandria, right, which is right where we used to live, right across 395 in Virginia. And, of course, any trial held in Northern Virginia is not going to be friendly to the administration. It just isn't. So, Bruce, let's just go to basics. What is it? I mean, we've alluded to the things he's actually done, but what are the charges against him?
Well, the charges that Comey is actually facing right now come out of the Eastern District of Virginia, as you say, in Alexandria. He's charged with two counts of violation of federal law. The first is making a false statement. In other words, when he testified before Congress, he made false statements. And obstruction of a congressional proceeding is the second count. And again, that goes hand in hand with lying to Congress about investigations. And these both stem out of testimony that Comey gave before Congress in 2020.
Okay, before we get into the nuts and bolts of what's happening, let's talk about personnel for a second, because we'll talk about Lindsey Halligan. Every report is Lindsey Halligan. She's not qualified. She's never done this before. You know, this is the story they tell, which has nothing to do with the trial, really nothing to do with this. It's a smokescreen. It's like you're waving your hand. Look at this, when the issue is his guilt or innocence. And so we've got his defense team. That's interesting. Patrick Fitzgerald is his defense attorney, right, Bruce?
That's correct.
And so let's talk about Patrick Fitzgerald because we know him.
You know, I actually worked for Patrick Fitzgerald in the Northern District of Illinois, excuse me, as an FBI agent for a while. I was doing legal work, and I was appointed as what's called a SAUSA. That's a Special Assistant United States Attorney. And I don't profess to know Pat Fitzgerald well. I've met him, but that's all. But Pat Fitzgerald came with a lot of fanfare. We really expected high things of him. And he was doing good things in Illinois. But then it's kind of like he teamed up with James Comey when James Comey was the deputy attorney general under John Ashcroft, who was the attorney general. And where Fitzgerald started to become infamous in my mind was there was a case involving Scooter Libby, who worked for the Bush administration, and it was alleged that Scooter Libby had leaked the identity of a CIA informant.
Oh, darn. By Valerie the name Plame.
Of Valerie Plame.
Valerie Plame. I'll never forget that.
Now, you, here's the backstory of this, though. Valerie Plame was in plain sight as a CIA informant. She was going around bragging about her work for the CIA.
She was posing for pictures with her husband in a convertible with a scarf like they were, she was a movie star.
Yeah.
Like she's really trying to disguise her involvement.
Yeah. And that case should have gone nowhere. But because Scooter Libby talked about the identity of Valerie Plame, James Comey decided to unleash the Department of Justice on Scooter, excuse me, on Scooter Libby.
You know, Bruce, actually, Scooter Libby, we know, did not leak that. It was a Richard Armitage or somebody like that,
yes,
in the administration.
Another person, yeah, actually leaked the name, and then Scooter Libby later repeated the name, but he was not
the leaker,
the cause of the leak. And here's the way this played out. Pat Fitzgerald was appointed as a special counsel to prosecute Scooter Libby, and guess who appointed him? The Deputy Attorney General at that time, James Comey. That was in 2003. John Ashcroft was the attorney general at that time, and he should have handled the prosecution, but he had recused himself because he said there was a potential conflict of interest, and I don't know what that may have been. So then it went to Comey to appoint someone. He appoints Pat Fitzgerald, and he gives him the power that the attorney general himself would have to investigate. It's very unusual, and when you are given that power, you are not bound by many of the procedural checks that a normal investigation would fall under. So basically, what you have is Comey unleashed Pat Fitzgerald on Scooter Libby because they wanted to get him.
And they destroyed Scooter Libby. Scooter Libby was a great guy. There was nothing wrong with him. He was a patriot, and he didn't do what they accused him of, but they brought all the power of the federal government on him. And they were able to, I think he went to jail for a long time.
He did.
I think he lost his law license. I mean, this whole business of destroying people has been happening for a long time.
He was finally pardoned by President Trump recently, but the damage was done. I mean, years ago.
Yeah, so, and then Patrick Fitzgerald, I'll say one more thing about him, Bruce, because we kind of thought he was a good guy. And then I used to listen to National Public Radio on Saturdays. Yeah, Ask Me Why. I actually kind of enjoyed it. And I heard him on their talk show, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. He was the special guest, and he was in a very important position then. I don't know exactly what his title was. What was he doing in Illinois?
He was the U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Illinois, which includes Chicago.
And on that program, he mocked Scooter Libby. He was the prosecutor. It was so untoward, and that's the first time I realized that he was a committed leftist. He really was.
And of course, you are really seeing the swamp play out in this drama that we're facing here with James Comey, because guess who is representing James Comey? Patrick Fitzgerald. And, you know, this is just like the Mueller appointment. This is the swamp. These guys know each other for years. You know, Patrick Fitzgerald, I don't think he should be allowed to take this case.
Well, I would just say, in general, it's a kind of a conflict of interest that Patrick should take this for a lot of reasons that we know. And yet, nobody's challenging this. They're letting Patrick do this. And, Comey, Patrick Fitzgerald, Mueller, and there are others. They're kind of a cabal. And I believe they were involved in the Enron scandal also. And so they go back a long way, and they've done some really bad things, I have to say. So they're a group that turns up, and they defend each other, and they do, I think, bordering on lawless things.
Yeah.
So here we go.
And I want to go back to your point that was made, that Lindsey Halligan is unqualified to act as the
interim U.S. attorney? Okay.
To act as the interim U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia. Here are the qualifications for someone to become an interim U.S. attorney. You have to be appointed by the attorney general, which Pam Bondi appointed Lindsey Halligan. It can be for a period of 120 days, Lindsay Halligan was only U.S. attorney for about a week when this occurred, so she was well within the 120 days. And no one can be appointed to that position who has been refused confirmation by the Senate. Lindsay Halligan was never presented to the Senate to be confirmed. So she meets all of those. The other qualifications is you have to be a U.S. citizen, which she is. You have to have a law degree, which she has from the University of Miami Law School. You have to have a bar affiliation, which she does from Florida. You have to have at least 3 years of legal experience. Well, she's been an attorney for 12 years now. And you have to pass a background investigation, which she has already as a member of President Trump's staff. So for them to say that Lindsay Halligan is unqualified is an absolute lie.
And isn't that kind of a side issue? Is that an issue in the trial at all?
This is like when you throw everything against the wall and try to make something stick.
Yeah.
The defense knows that Lindsay Halligan meets all the qualifications to be a U.S. attorney. Now, is she an experienced U.S. attorney? No, she just took the job over. But that doesn't mean she's incapable of doing the job. Everyone starts somewhere.
Bruce, let me read to you what ABC wrote about this, because I think you'll want to comment on this. Halligan, Trump's hand-picked U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia, sought the indictment of Comey over the objections of career prosecutors after Trump forced out previous U.S. attorney Eric Siebert, whose sources said had resisted bringing cases against Comey and New York Attorney General Letitia James. Okay, so Bruce, correct me if I'm wrong. Doesn't the President of the United States have a right to position and place and choose U.S. attorneys all over the United States?
Absolutely. Yeah. The U.S. attorneys for each district serve at the pleasure of the president.
And this guy wouldn't quit. As I recall, he wouldn't quit. He wouldn't step down. And that's why Lindsay was late getting into the position.
Well, and here's the thing. The Eastern District of Virginia is really a cabal of incestuousness. Guess who was working under Eric Siebert as one of his assistant U.S. attorneys? And guess who he was? He was James Comey's son-in-law, a guy by the name of Troy Edwards Jr. And Edwards was whispering in the ear of Siebert the entire time that Siebert was considering the evidence against Comey, saying, you know, we don't really have a case here. You know, this is my father-in-law. You know, he's a former FBI director. You can't ruin his career. I mean, you think that didn't have an effect. And Troy Edwards was allowed to continue working in that office, even though complete conflict of interest. He should have been nowhere near the investigation into his father-in-law. And Troy Edwards worked for that district right up until the day that James Comey was indicted. And he resigned that day.
All right, so let's go back now to what's actually happened. The trial is taking place in Alexandria, Virginia. And let me explain this, Bruce, and then I really have a lot of questions for you. All right, so there's a judge, Judge William Fitzpatrick, who in the last week or so ordered the Trump administration, now they always say that, it's the Justice Department, to turn over a full transcript and recording of the September grand jury presentation by Trump-appointed U.S. attorney Lindsay Halligan, where she might have made, they say, fundamental misstatements of the law that could compromise the integrity of the grand jury process. And this judge, Fitzpatrick, expressed alarm at what he called a disturbing pattern of profound investigative missteps that may have irreversibly tainted the prosecution of James Comey and violated the former FBI director's constitutional rights in a scathing opinion granting Comey's attorneys access to a vast trove of grand jury evidence. And my understanding, Bruce, is they're asking for all the video of all the witnesses before the grand jury, all the transcripts. Does that ever happen? Isn't that illegal?
This is basically a non-event. There is a rule under the federal rules of criminal procedure called 6E. And basically what it is it's whatever happens in the grand jury is secret. And that's so witnesses can't be intimidated. People can't get a heads up that they're going to be indicted, so maybe they'll flee the country. There's a number of reasons why you keep the grand jury proceedings secret. Now, the judge obviously has not listened to these tapes or seen these videos because he's ordering it to be turned over now. Think about this. Now he's made this statement, though, that all of this stuff looks like it was done underhandedly, that Lindsey Halligan did this and that. Now, I want to ask you, Sandy, how do you think that if this is a secret proceeding, if this indictment of James Comey was it done in secret, which they all are, it's not like this is nefarious. All indictments are gotten under secrecy for the reasons we stated. And now all of a sudden, the judge apparently seems to know everything that went on in that grand jury room. And you start to wonder, and I looked up the background on Magistrate Judge Fitzpatrick, and sure enough, he was a prosecutor in the Eastern District of Virginia. In other words, he formerly worked in that district. As I can tell you from experience, people talk that work in these districts. The court reporters, who are not supposed to say anything. What I'm getting at is, it sounds to me like Patrick Fitzgerald worked all his little connections with the Justice Department to try and get any information he could, which is unethical. He should not be trying to delve into secret proceedings. I don't have proof he's done this, but you connect the dots. This is a remedy that is never asked for, really, and is never granted. That is allowing people to hear the grand jury proceedings and what went on, unless you are a member of the grand jury.
Bruce, I want to drill down on that for a second. Because I want to repeat that you were a prosecutor in Cook County in Chicago for a number of years before you went into the FBI. So you know about evidence. You know about grand juries. You've convened them. You know all about this. So I'm going to ask you again. Have you ever, ever in your career seen a judge order the release of grand jury information to the person being prosecuted?
I have never seen that. That was always like the Holy Grail. Is you do not release grand jury material. And if you do, having worked discipline for the FBI, we had a couple cases where people may have talked about what went on in the grand jury. I'm telling you, they got come down on like a house of bricks. The grand jury proceedings are secret for a reason. And there is no way that Pat Fitzgerald had all of this information that he claims to have. Now let's put this on the table too. They are claiming this is what happened. They don't have proof yet. But what they're doing, the defense team for Comey, is they're muddying the waters. They're tainting what we call tainting the jury pool. In other words, you think people aren't hearing about this, that, oh, they may have railroaded James Comey. And if this thing gets to trial, you're going to have jurors picked from that area. And you think this isn't a big story in the Eastern District of Virginia? I can just tell you, they're setting this up to reach the jury that's potentially going to decide this case.
Well, and I would expand further. Look what just happened in the election in Virginia. I mean, it was a sweep for the left. And with all the federal workers, it's thick with that. It is not friendly territory for conservatives, Bruce, and I can tell you firsthand. I want to go, Bruce, to a report from NBC. This reporter does a good job. She's outside the courtroom, and she kind of lays out the details. So let's talk about, because there's more to say about what's happened since the demand by this Fitzpatrick that the grand jury information be released to the Comey team. Let's listen at 6A.
This is important. It's one step in the process, but some unusual factors. As you pointed out, these two cases, one against the New York Attorney General Letitia James and another against the former FBI Director James Comey, those are in different districts, but together they were brought here today. This motion being heard by a judge from still another district in South Carolina to come here and review this critical issue is someone who worked for President Trump as his private lawyer, then worked in the White White House and has now been placed in this interim U.S. attorney role. Her name is Lindsay Halligan. Was she lawfully put in that position? And there were real questions raised about that, and the judge indicated some skepticism in her questioning of the government's lawyers here. And Halligan had no prior prosecutorial experience. She is a lawyer, but had not worked in this area before. And at issue is, if she was not lawfully in the position, was she able to bring indictments in these cases? So the two defense teams, for Comey and for Attorney General James, are asking the judge to throw out these cases and also asking to disqualify Halligan. And then there would be a question about, if that happens, can new charges be brought? Because certainly in the case of James Comey, the statute of limitations has already been passed. So these are important legal issues. And in a big picture sense, it involves some of the national figures we've been talking so much about. Are there political prosecutions against adversaries of the president, and did an ally of the president play a part in that? That's part of what is being examined here. Sinclair?
And Kelly, you mentioned big picture. Can we talk about the stakes for a moment? If the judge rules in favor of James and Comey, could their indictments be thrown out?
Well, they're asking for dismissals, so yes, they could be thrown out. And then the question would be, would there be a process to try to get charges brought forward again with a different attorney in that role? Attorney General Pam Bondi tried to prevent that being a problem by also naming Halligan as a special prosecutor overseeing these two jurisdictions and two cases, and that was also debated in court today. So today was important. We expect the judge to provide an answer on this before Thanksgiving.
Bruce, we've talked about this before, but I know a little bit about criminal defense attorneys, and I would say in general, criminal defense attorneys are just great liars. They are the persons that you know who can make you believe anything if they talk to you. They are experts at creating problems that don't exist, of twisting facts. Am I saying anything that shocks you, dear?
No, you are not, having dealt with them for years. Listen, this again is a big smokescreen. If there is a potential problem with this indictment, the government is always allowed to get what we call a superseding indictment. In other words, you present the case once again to the grand jury and request that they return a bill of indictment. And statute of limitations has no effect if there's already been an indictment brought. Statute stops. So, again, they're throwing up anything against the wall to try to get this dismissed. You know, I thought Comey wasn't guilty of this. You know, I don't understand why he just can't go to trial and
why can't he? There's two little charges.
He's so innocent.
Just two little charges.
And I'm not against somebody exhausting their defense options, but and the judges, this Judge Fitzgerald or Judge Fitzpatrick, who has made all these statements alleging misconduct potentially on Halligan's part, I don't understand what he's doing. If he thought there was really misconduct by Halligan, what I would have done if I was him is I would have said, okay, turn over to me, the judge, the tapes and the transcripts, and I will review them in private, and I will then have a basis or non-basis to rule that there's misconduct. But what it sounds like is he's listening to innuendo, because if he wasn't there, which he obviously wasn't in the grand jury room, and all he's taking is Patrick Fitzgerald's allegations of misconduct by Halligan, how does Patrick Fitzgerald know of this? Again, we talked about this is a secret proceeding. Now, how does he allegedly know this stuff?
Well, the only explanation is what you're indicating. Yeah. Bruce, I am confused
and
about
you know
something.
What? I think Lindsay Halligan has in response. Look, you know, they never talk about what Lindsay Halligan has done in response. She has given a sworn affidavit that she has turned over everything that went on in the grand jury, and that there was none of this was done, what's being alleged. So, you know, we don't get that side of the story.
Okay, so the update on this is that this week, this is, we're speaking to you on Tuesday, November the 18th. On Monday of this week, initially, there was a news story that I'm reading that Comey won access to the grand jury records. But then I read an update that there was a stay on it by a U.S. District Judge, right. Michael Nachmanoff. So can you can explain that, honey?
Well, what it is Judge Fitzpatrick is just a what we call a magistrate judge. I don't want to demean it, but a magistrate judge really does not have much power.
He's not the judge in the proceeding, though, right?
He is not the judge. The actual case of James Comey has been assigned to this judge, Nachmanoff. And basically, Fitzpatrick, the magistrate judge, issued his decision, and Nachmanoff, who is over him, has said, wait a minute, I want to review this. I don't know if what you've done is correct. So right now the thing is sitting a little bit in limbo while Nachmanoff reviews what went on. And each side was asked to present documents, present briefs outlining their side of the case.
Okay. All right. Well, that's probably all we can say about that today. There is one other thing I want to discuss briefly before we say goodbye. We'll take a brief break and we'll be back. It's going to be on the Epstein case. Just a few things I think need to be said. We'll be back after this.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
All right, well, this has been On Demand with Jenna Ellis, and as always, these episodes come out generally every Friday, so make sure that you are sharing with your friends and your family, and we always take suggestions for topics, for guests that you submit, so you can always reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net. These conversations are incredibly important so that we focus on, as I was saying, a comprehensive view of policy, because if we just compartmentalize all of these different issues and have what I kind of call a smorgasbord of policy considerations, and everybody kind of adds to their plate whatever their pet issue is and whatever viewpoint they have on it, then it's not a cohesive worldview. We need to start with the foundation of truth, that is the person of God, and then we need to build up our policy views from there, and that touches and concerns everything about how we direct and pursue the institutions that God has ordained under his ordered authority, the church government, the family government, and the civil government, and of course the interplay between those institutions. And so we'll continue to talk about all of these things on demand, and also of course on the radio side on Jenna Ellis in the morning. So this has been On Demand, and once again, you can always reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Well, I don't want to talk about that. What I do want to say is that Todd is a great attorney, but you ought to be speaking about Larry Summers. You ought to be speaking about some of his friends that are hedge fund guys. They're all over the place. You ought to be speaking about Bill Clinton, who went to the island 28 times. I never went to the island.
Do you maintain you did not write a letter for Jeffrey Epstein's birthday?
I don't even know what they're talking about. Now, somebody could have written a letter and used my name, but that's happened a lot. All you have to do is take a look at the dossier, the fake dossier. Everything's fake with that administration. Everything's fake with the Democrats. Take a look at what they just found about the dossier. Everything is fake. They're a bunch of sick people.
All right, so that's President Trump. He's calling for now the release of all the documents on Epstein. And just a few points that I feel need to be made. It's just fascinating. People have accused President Trump of, surely he must be involved in this. You should see the reports. I could spend another hour playing the news stories. And you know that even Marjorie Taylor Greene, Thomas Massey are inferring that President Trump has something to hide. But every time the documents are released or the email and we see that certain things have been redacted to make President Trump look implicated, he's not implicated. I remember Attorney General Bill Barr actually said he'd been through the information, they'd researched it, and he declared that Trump was not guilty of anything. Now, look, Jeffrey Epstein did just, I have not spoken about this because it's just too horrific to consider. I talked about it in the past, Pedophile Island. I talked about Bill Clinton being on that plane 28 different times. It was the Lolita Express. You fill in the blanks about what happened on that plane. I also understand from another source that Hillary Clinton may have been on that plane herself. And they would go to this island and they would use girls in the most horrendous ways. And I guess boys too. It's such a horrible story. And so it has caught fire among especially conservatives. I just mentioned Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massie. They have been just obsessed with it. Now, look, do I think this is important, that justice be done? Epstein killed himself, that these people involved, like Prince Andrew, and he was outed, he was destroyed in England, and he should have been. Do I think that justice shouldn't happen? Yes, I do. And I actually think President Trump does also. I'm going to talk about his part in this in just a second. But I do truly believe that the reason President Trump when he says it's a hoax, he's not saying it didn't really happen. That's not what he means. He is saying that the Democrats are using this to cause distraction, to try to build another case against him. President Trump is focused on saving this country. All of those overseas trips that Marjorie Taylor Greene complains about, she talks about, we don't care about that. He doesn't care about domestic issues. He's just flying all over the place. We don't care about foreign leaders coming into the White House. That's not interesting to us. It's so small-minded. Do you not understand that we are $36 trillion in debt and President Trump is trying to reverse course, like hugely reverse course, in our decline as a nation? Our financial decline, doesn't matter how good everything else is, if we go under financially, we will not exist anymore. We'll be trampled over by our enemies. We're close to that now. And so all of these trade agreements and all of this is bringing revenue in to try to reverse course, to put a stick in the wheel to stop this reversing. So he's not going over there to ingratiate himself. He's not killing himself by flying internationally all over the globe. For his own glory, he's trying to stop the destruction of the American economy. He has to do that before he can actually then back home do so many of the other things that he wants to do. I don't think anybody can fault this man for not working, how many hours a day? Close to 24. He doesn't sleep much. And so this whole business about Epstein, from a man like President Trump, and from, I have to say, I'm not a man like President Trump, from my perspective too, is a sideshow, a tabloid issue. President Trump can't concentrate on that. He has much bigger things to do, developing energy, trying to stop the Green New Deal, trying to stop the flood, the bleed of our finances that was set up by the Biden administration. That's what he's concentrating on, as well as making things safe in the world. We have all of these terrible enemies that have thrived under Joe Biden. Joe Biden and his team really set in motion the bankruptcy of the country. They gave money out. You know this. I'm sure you must. That they gave out money like crazy, as much as they could give away. They were writing checks and giving grants. They gave Stacey Abrams, a black activist who ran for governor, $2 billion in a grant. $2 billion! Her organization, I don't even think they knew how to write checks. They gave her $2 billion. I'm giving you that as an illustration to how they gave out money. President Trump is trying to stem the tide, stop the bleed. He didn't have time to mess with the Epstein scandal. And yet the Democrats, yes, it's true. They're using it against him. They're using it to try to destroy him. And then conservatives like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massie have jumped on the bandwagon. And people that I respect and love have, it's spread so much doubt. It's like the fixation on Jeffrey Epstein and the pedophilia scandal has really gotten in, it's gone into sort of, to me, crazy territory, okay? I think the man's guilty. What he did is just defies your imagination, but it can't be an obsession. It's not the most important thing, especially with all the things that are happening. Nevertheless, President Trump has now changed his mind because they're hassling him so much over this. and they're going to be releasing this. Now, what the Democrats did, just to be very clear, the House Oversight Committee has done a great response to this. They actually took the information, the email that's been released. There's thousands of pages that have already been released. But the Democrats redacted names. Like, there's a woman, her last name's Guffrey. I remember playing a video of her probably 6 months ago. I did talk about this, I guess. She ended up being killed or killing herself. And honestly, I'm not sure.
She killed herself.
But she killed herself. She said very clearly that President Trump was not involved. She was there since the time she was a girl. He was not there on the island. He never saw her. And so when the Democrats released these emails, they took out her name and edited the email so that it looked like it implied that President Trump might be involved. That's how dirty they are. They're that dirty. All right, so now names are coming out. Okay, so like Larry Summers, who's the president emeritus and professor at Harvard University. He was the secretary of treasury under Bill Clinton. So now we find out that he was 7 years tied at the hip to Jeffrey Epstein. Jeffrey Epstein was giving him advice on his girlfriend. Okay, so Larry Summers is now stepping down, and I'm sure that's probably not all that took place between the two of them. How could it be, given the severity and the rottenness of Jeffrey Epstein's life and work? But that's what Larry Summers is saying it's about. So he's going to be stepping down. President Trump is now calling out names. Reid Hoffman. Reid is like the founder of some famous company, and he hates President Trump, and he has spent millions of dollars trying to destroy President Trump. Well, he's one of the ones that was on the island a lot, and President Trump has called him out. And I know that Reid was trying to stop the release of the Epstein information. So also there's J.P. Morgan Chase. They're involved in this in some form or fashion, allegedly covering up. And I don't know. I think according to what I was reading, there's like 20 different high-profile persons. I don't know what category, maybe investment. President Trump said it's investment and stuff that are going to be identified, and who knows what else. And so let it be. Just release it. Let's let it be. And let President Trump alone. Why do I say that? Because, yes, he knew Jeffrey Epstein. Remember that President Trump, they traveled in the same circle. So there are pictures of him with Melania and Jeffrey Epstein and his wife. But we also know that President Trump kicked him out of his golf club. At some point, he completely kicked him out. Wouldn't have anything to do with him. I think he didn't have any contact with him for 15 years. And the other part of this is that I think, as I read, that President Trump talked to Ghislaine Maxwell, according to Jeffrey Epstein, and told her, in the words of Jeffrey Epstein in an email, to stop it. Stop it. They were recruiting girls from Trump's club, trying to take, I don't know if Trump understood what's happening to them, but they were recruiting them away from the club. And so that was a source of contention. And now here's the kicker. You may or may or not or may not have heard of this, but Mike Johnson was being interviewed. This is a little bit of a confusing interview. The payoff is in the very last section of this. Listen carefully. Speaker Mike Johnson, clip 3.
There were tears in the room. There was outrage. It was both, I would describe it as heartbreaking and infuriating that justice has been delayed so long. Some of the women in the room.
I expect he will, but I mean, the whole effort has been mooted. It's not necessary anymore. Let me make this very clear, as we've made several times the last couple of days. The Oversight Committee's effort goes further than the discharge.
It comes he across as calling the whole thing a hoax.
It's been misrepresented. He's not saying that what Epstein did is a hoax. It's a terrible, unspeakable evil. He believes that himself. When he first heard the rumor, he kicked him out of Mar-a-Lago. He was an FBI informant to try to take this stuff down. The president knows and has great sympathy for the women who have suffered these unspeakable harms. It's detestable to him.
Did you catch that? President Trump was an FBI informant against Jeffrey Epstein? Did you catch it? All right. I don't know. I can see that President Trump, as much as he brags, there's some things he won't brag about, like how he helps people. And some of the great things that he does, he doesn't like to talk about that. I think that I could make the case if I had the time. But I don't think he wanted people to know that part. And so I think President Trump is completely innocent when it comes to Jeffrey Epstein. And one last thing, Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massie, I really liked both of them. I have liked them. I liked the things that they stood for and said. But something's really rotten. Something's gone really bad. Marjorie Taylor, you know, actually worked with the Democrats to keep the shutdown going. She's now an enemy of Israel. She's on that camp. She's accused President Trump and inferred on the Epstein case that he might be involved, and that's the reason he doesn't want to release the information. And, of course, she's criticizing him for traveling all over the globe and not paying attention to domestic affairs, which is a silly, really small-minded person's view of what's happening right now. But my understanding is that Marjorie Taylor wanted to run for Senate in Georgia. She wanted that to be her next step, and President Trump would not help her do that. And that's maybe the real source of her anger. Thomas Massie, I don't know what's happened to Thomas. He is a different man. I used to love him. I used to know him when I was in D.C. Not well, but I loved interviewing him because he really was, he had his own thoughts and his own mind, but he was very patriotic, and he wanted what was best for the country. He's been working with the Democratic Socialists. He's been taking money for his campaign from the Democratic Socialists. He also worked with the Democrats over the shutdown. So something's very wrong here. And I wish I had time. I would play a clip that just kind of, to me, revealed some things that I did not like. I always look for other things that are not the things. I look for issues of the heart. And Thomas, in an interview with ABC, I think it was, talked about how they didn't invite President Trump to his wedding, and his wife thinks that's why President Trump he's mad, because he wasn't invited. Just petty, petty, silly things, I have to say. So I'm not on Tom's, not because of that, but in recent times I've lost respect for Thomas Massie. He's done some real damage. Marjorie Taylor Greene has also. And so with that, I'm going to end. Bruce, do you have any comments about that, anything I've left out?
Well, just to follow up on you, I wish that in retrospect, Donald Trump had just released the Epstein files in total as soon as he got into office and let the chips fall where they may. That is a situation that should not have been handled from a political standpoint. It should have been handled through the court system, and all the evidence should have been released. I have no doubt that President Trump, in his mind, I don't think he was trying to protect himself. I think he was trying to protect the country. In other words, we have lots of problems, and if the Epstein files would have all come out, that would have been all people talked about, and it would have diverted everything from getting into the agenda of the Trump administration taking power. The other thing, and look, President Trump talks a lot, and he cannot be careful with every word, but I wish to God he had never used the word hoax in referring to this Epstein files, because that, while we know he did not mean that this did not happen, he was mischaracterizing how he was using the word hoax to show how the Democrats were mischaracterizing the
story, and his involvement in it. They were using it as a whipping post, lying, redacting, doing all of that. They were creating another situation like the Russia hoax to use against him to destroy him. That's what he meant.
And again, goes to my point that they were trying to derail the administration right away. Let's throw the Epstein thing up and just take away from anything that's being done.
Right. I think so. Well, I hope that we were clear about, I hope these two subjects, it was helpful what we said to you today. And I want to remind you that Preborn makes it possible for us to have these discussions. By the way, Bruce Rather, thank you for joining me today.
Well, as usual, it's Washington, D.C. is a swamp, and we are really seeing it right now.
Yeah. Dirty, dirty, dirty. Yeah, very few good people survive that, as we know. So, all right, I want to remind you that our sponsor is Preborn. We couldn't have these conversations without their help. And it's getting close to Christmas here. If you would like to do a year-end gift of something really special, please do that. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.